Hi, this is Dr. Beth of Self Care MD, and I have with me today Sarika Sernhaus. Sarika is a nationally certified practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine and Chinese herbal medicine, practicing Japanese-style acupuncture. She teaches on the importance and the practice of traditional food through her program, Fresh, Fun, and Flavorful in the Funky Kitchen, and is the author of The Funky Kitchen, One Soccer Mom's Favorite Traditional Food Techniques and Recipes, which is on Amazon, 5-star best of the month. Take a look. She's a coach for Metabolic Balance of Germany, serves on the board of directors for the National Association of Nutrition Professionals, and is a member of the Weston A. Price Foundation. And she resides in Northern Arizona with her husband and 2 children. I recently met Sarika at a women's leadership conference. And she said in her introduction, the one thing she said about herself was that she was passionate about the microbiome. And I said, I need to talk to her. So I have her online. Welcome, Sarika.
Thank you so much. It is a joy to be here.
Yeah. So, I think we've all sort of been exposed to these little snippets about the microbiome here and there and what it does, and maybe some articles on NPR. But I'd like to hear from you, your definition, and about what is the microbiome.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting thing. I think to talk about the microbiome, we have to look back in time a little bit at the Human Genome Project, because up until the time of the Human Genome Project, it was kind of recognized that our genes were our destiny. And so these researchers were really digging deeply into what was held as kind of a truth. And as they began looking into the genetic code and the expression of genetic code in the people that they were researching, they came to understand that actually the bigger part that has play on who and what we are is not so much the genetic information that we carry within us, but rather the various different entities that live within us and on us. And that is what makes up the biome. And it's actually reckoned that this kind of microbial activity, so it's bacteria, it's bacteriophage, it's viral material, it's fungal material, all of these types of entities, they actually outnumber our cellular material by about 9 to 1, 10 to 1. And so we are actually about 90% something other than our genetic material. And that's kind of amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
It's an amazing number. And so when we look at that truth as we've come to understand it, oh, my goodness, in the wake of that has come such a flood of interest in terms of recognizing, well, golly gee, who's driving the ship on this thing? And if it isn't so much us, then what do we need to do to make these other parts of us happy so that we have the best life that we can have? And I think it comes as no surprise to anybody listening that much of the medical model of the West in the 20th century was about antibiotics, antibacterial, antipathogenic behavior in terms of the food systems and the medical systems and the agricultural systems. And so what we have done in a very short window of time is really had a tremendously potent impact on the genetic expression of the human being. And that's important because it is another truth that has come to be understood throughout the 20th century is that it's the lifestyle choices that we make, what is now, you know, falling under this rubric that's called epigenetics, that has such an impact on this. But that's intimately tied to how we keep this microbial activity within and within us happy, how we express our genetic makeup and the best version of who we are. And so when it comes to the microbiome, you know, there are microbiome areas on the skin. One of the really fun little exercises that I've done is to take a Q-tip swab and to swab different parts of, you know, my face. And so the nose, the cheek, you know, maybe up on the ear, down on the chin, and to put those on a Petri dish and then have set aside the time and allow an opportunity to see what type of bacteria are different for those different parts of just my face, not someone else's face, and to see that even on that small surface of my body, how there are such different biome activity, you know, based off of where I'd swabbed. And so when we're talking about the biome of the body, I think we can understand that it's something that is multifaceted. At the very least, it's multifaceted. And I think a good example of that is that a healthy biome for the colon is not the same as a healthy biome for the mouth. And if we were to take the microbes that are healthy for the colon and put them into the mouth, we can make someone very sick. You know, that's the way that E. coli poisoning happens. And
right.
So these are the things where we recognize, okay, you know, if we're looking to make a biome happy, we've got to start getting very centered on what that is. So it's a very huge, huge, huge endeavor, and we're just starting to dip into it.
Wow. Wow, that's so amazing.
It really
wow.
is amazing. So, yeah, it's a mouthful, but it's because it's a mouthful.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about antibiotics, you know, it's not only antibiotics, it's how sterile everything is and the alcohol stuff that we put on our hands and how many times we have to wash our hands and how we can't touch this and we can't do this and we radiate this for sterility, and I wonder how much we're altering what's really supposed to be evolving.
Well, I think that there's a lot to be said for that balance of things. And, you know, starting, I'd say, in the 90s, you know, when people were really starting to recognize they, you know, have these different syndromes called sick building syndrome or people who just, you know, basically had to live in a bubble because they had knocked out their ability to handle coming into contact with anything because they'd lived such a sterile life. And I think that we forget that our evolution as a species has been growing up among the dirt. And it hasn't been until the last, you know, for, you know, the broad swath of Western society, not until the last 100 years or so, that we have really moved into this model of everything, you know, increasingly sterilizing. And, you know, it's because, you know, we've seen the fallout of sickness that comes from certain types of bacterial and really bad viral presentations. So I think it came from a good place, but I think we went way too far with it. And
mm-hmm.
So now, you know, very common to read articles where, you know, people are advised to get their kids out playing in the dirt and, you know, to get dirty, to not be using so much of the antibacterial soaps and hand sanitizers. Because you're exactly right. What we're doing with those moves is we are setting ourselves up to not have relation with these microbes. And the little bit of stress that some of the pathogens do put on our system actually can be a very good thing for helping to keep our immune system strong. And also in the balance of nature, I mean, fermented foods are a great example of this. You're going to have bacteria that are going to be what we would call good bacteria, and then you're going to have bacteria we would call bad bacteria. Well, I just gave you an example of how really, there's no such thing as good or bad. It's just a matter of where it's placed and what it ends up doing for you. And so, I mean, E. coli is a good example of that. But in the case of fermentation, you know, if we're using like a chlorinated water when we're looking to make fermented vegetables, what we're going to be doing is using a broad spectrum antipathogenic that would be knocking out the quote-unquote bad bacteria as well as the good bacteria that would start the fermentation process on those vegetables. So it's going to be creating a place of sterility where if we had the opportunity for what we would call the beneficial bacteria to do their job and begin the fermentation process, they actually create their own environment through acidic fermentation processes and their own bactericidal action, where they inherently begin knocking out the space and place for any kind of residual pathogenic bacteria that might have been there. And so when we come in and we just do this broad spectrum warfare against bacteria, we really are messing up the ecosystem.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. So what are some other challenges to our microbiome?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we're talking about this instance of, you know, the sterility, you know, super hygienic practices. That's really a big deal. And I think when we think of that, we are thinking about, okay, we're using, you know, these antibacterial hand sanitizers and antibacterial soaps, all of this. That's a big deal. Because also what that's doing is that's not just knocking out, you know, the biome on your hand or wherever else it's coming into contact. But then our skin is our most absorptive organ, and so all the other chemicals that are put into the design of what that product is, they absorb right into your system, and that puts a strain on our system, on the level of the liver and the kidneys. And so that has its own, you know, weakening impact. Come into contact with something like that very occasionally, probably not going to be a big deal, but when you're doing it day in and day out, and that's what you use to keep your kids' hands clean and so on and so forth, it's a big deal. So that right there is a big deal. But let's back it up even a little bit further. And I'd mentioned it a moment ago, chlorinated water. You know, when we are bathing in chlorinated water, when we are drinking water that has chlorine and chloramines in it, we are knocking out that biome within and on us as well. Swimming in chlorinated pools, that's also a really big issue. I've worked a lot with athletes who've been, you know, competitive swimmers, and what that does to the biome, because they're breathing in those chlorine gases and swallowing it, it's rough on the skin biome and throughout the entire system. So those are some really big issues. Also, people eating foods that do not nourish the biome. And so a lot of folks have come to understand, of course, the term probiotics. But then there are also prebiotics, which are fibers that help to nourish the good bacteria that we do have within our system. And so eating a diet that has a good fiber content comes from fresh foods that are preferably organically grown, so that, you know, you're not having that exposure to the pesticides that are there. That's also a really big deal. Getting into, of course, the effect of antibiotics. That's a big deal as well. I mean, there are just so many ways that we are having this assault that's happening and not doing much to nourish what is within us. And so it's a multifaceted kind of debilitation, if you will, of this innate part of who we are. And it amazes me the impact that ends up happening in people's lives, not just in their overt you know, presentation of wellness, but also in their mental picture.
Yeah. Wow. So how can we heal our microbiomes? What can we do to bring them back into balance?
Right. You know, and that is such an important thing, because there have been some research that's been done recently looking at the lower large intestine biome, you know, looking at stool samples and that type of information of people who are indigenous tribes who've not been exposed to modern Western practices of eating and hygiene and whatnot. And I'm not saying that, you know, to go live in the bush is like the best answer for everybody, and don't they just have it great, because they have their own challenges. But if we're just looking at the what it means to live this Western lifestyle and what that's doing to us, when we look at the bacterial population within that portion of the gut compared to someone of the West, they outnumber us in terms of variety of species by about 50%. So, you know, that's huge, because these different species have such an impact, again, not just on our physical expression, but on our mental expression. And so what are these folks doing? Obviously, they're not working with antibiotics or, you know, these hygiene practices. And so one of the biggest things we can do is to remove the things or really lessen the things that continue to knock this out. And so starting with the obvious places, antibiotic use. I know I've certainly grown up in a time where, you know, you get a little sinus infection, little ear infection, you got this cough, you know, you run to the doctor. And the doctor often will prescribe antibiotics even without doing a culture. It's like a, well, it kind of looks like this, and, you know, let's just be on the safe side type of practice. Well, that ends up having quite an effect on the body, and from a, not just a physical but also a mental expression. So judicious use of antibiotics is, of course, a very, very smart place to begin. When it comes to washing hands, just going back to using soaps that, you know, are just the most simple, simple ingredients. And to be quite honest, if I'm out and about in the world, unless my hands have come into something really caustic and nasty, I don't even use the soaps that they use, that they offer, you know, in a standard restroom. I just wash my hands under hot water, rub them together with friction very well, and then dry them well. So, and to me, that's more than enough because it helps to maintain my biome, and let's be honest, most of that water is going to be chlorinated anyway. So that's also a big thing, not exposing to these, you know, bleach wipes that we use in the children's classrooms for wiping down everything. All of that, that makes me crazy. I mean, it makes me crazy. Yeah. So less exposure to that sort of thing. So one of the biggest things anytime we've got an issue is, you know, we think, oh, I've got to do more of this and more of that. Well, sometimes what you have to do is take out some things of what you're doing. And so this, the first stage of this healing is making sure you're reducing your exposure to things that hurt the biome. You know, using a toothpaste that has triclosan in it. Colgate Total Whitening, I think, is there. Anyways, one of theirs has triclosan, which is an antibiotic. And people use that every day, twice a day. That knocks out the biome of the mouth. And you know, we end up swallowing a little bit of it, and so it gets into the system. So being mindful of what we're cleaning ourselves up with, you know, top to bottom is very important. And then looking also to help nourish is the next step. And that is where beginning to use foods that, again, have a good naturally occurring fiber content, so fresh produce, notably fresh vegetables. Beans are a great source of fiber, and they can be a terrific prebiotic with Jerusalem artichokes, apples, bananas. These are types of fibers that actually help to give food to the bacteria that live within our bellies. So that type of nourishment is very good, but then reducing the processed foods that are in our diet, there's really no place for them. There's no need to eat them. And what it does is it ends up setting us up for a lot of trouble at the level of the digestion. And so a whole food diet, and where we're bringing in even some fermented foods, naturally fermented foods, that are in a raw state, because one of the important things about that versus using, you know, a store-bought probiotic is, which I'm not averse to using a probiotic, but the issue with a probiotic is we get into something that's along the lines of farming monoculture style. And those may be strains that maybe aren't the very best strains for your body. And so when we take them day after day after day after day, they are going to really begin to have impact on what the environment is that's happening within us. And so my preference is to get just more variety of naturally fermented foods into the diet so that we are not only taking in such a broad spectrum of different beneficial bacteria, but we're also getting the cofactors that help us to put that to use in our body. Again, this is what we've evolved to do. We didn't evolve to just take probiotic pills, but what we did do is we evolved to use fermented foods across the globe. You can look at any culture. Fermentation before refrigeration was one of the ways that people preserve food through the winter, or if they were going on a long voyage or something. And so there's been this evolution that we've grown up with as a species, and we've gotten away from it. So I love using fermented foods. That could be a little bit of, you know, raw sauerkraut, of course, or in Korea they do kimchi. It could be drinks. You know, kombucha is very popular. Another drink is water kefir. Water kefir is what I call it. And then, of course, you get into, you know, your fermented dairy, cheeses and yogurts and milk kefir, that sort of thing. And the thing about these probiotic-rich foods is that we don't need a ton of it. You know, I was just working with a patient last week. She and her daughter came, and we were talking about, you know, bottled kombucha, and they were saying, oh, gosh, it just gives me such a stomachache when I drink it. Well, they're drinking the entire bottle in one setting. And I said, no. We just need, like, a cup of that. But
yeah, one bottle, two servings.
Oh, and it, and honestly, in my book, that would be more like eight. We need just a small amount. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but let me just say, you don't need the whole bottle, and you really shouldn't. So we just need a little bit to kind of prime the pump, if you will. And so it's bringing in those types of foods that are going to help to nourish and to sustain that practice of bringing a healthier biome to our body.
Nice. Wow. Such information. So a couple of times it's come up about the fiber content of the food, and this is what those particular bacteria feed on, is the fiber.
Yep, that's what they need. The course that I teach around my book, The Funky Kitchen, it's all about the use of pre-digestion methods. And I know that's a pretty heavy-sounding word. I wish there was a better word, but there isn't one. But it's pre-digestion methods. And what it is it's allowing, most of the time, it's working with beneficial bacteria and yeast to break down the carbohydrate content. Well, what are carbohydrates? That fiber is a form of carbohydrate. And so these beneficial bacteria and yeast, what they feed on is carbohydrate content, fiber. And so we've got to give them food or else they're going to be starved out. And so we want to give them these prebiotic fibers that they have an opportunity to munch on and continue to be happy. Now, if a person's been eating, they've been eating antibiotics their whole life, they're using these different cleansing, techniques that just create this hygienic environment, ultra hygienic, and then they have been eating a very processed diet. So let's just get real. We're talking about most of America. This is how most of America lives.
Right.
What we are doing in this instance is we are setting the stage for fewer beneficial bacteria to be flourishing and happy within us. And that gives an opportunity for other naturally occurring, totally part of the natural domain within us, it allows those types of microbial entities to get an upper hand. And that's when people start talking about, oh, I've got a candida overgrowth, I've got fungal infection issues, I've got small intestine bacterial overgrowth, I'm experiencing GERD. All of these can have their root in this lack of balance of good bacteria that has been nourished with healthy foods. And so what we're wanting to do is create an environment by bringing in more beneficial bacteria and bringing in more foods that help to nourish them that sets the stage for the good guys to flourish, if you will.
We like the good guys.
Yeah, we need that balance. For sure. And what I tell you, that is one of the big things is, you know, when we start bringing in that balance for somebody, I've seen this in the classes I teach and with the patients that I work with. The first shift that I see happen is in, you know, their mental affect and how they feel on an emotional level. It's the most, it's the easiest place to move in a lot of ways. You know, when we're looking to create, you know, healthy new cell structure by changing our diet, you know, that takes months. But one of the fastest, most quickly moving places we can begin to see the effect of what we're doing is with how we feel emotionally. And so to me, that's a great gauge of, okay, yeah, things are kind of moving in the right track. You're happier.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, so emotional effects. So, you know, we're all stressed out and creating this environment of stress and scarcity and running on a sympathetic wavelength now. And I was wondering what, you know, we've sort of touched on it, but can you sum up some widespread effects that are happening now with unhealthy microbiomes running around?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that it is a matter of correlation where we're just kind of, what we have to do is kind of connect the dots and extrapolate. There were a couple of doctors in the early 20th century that, if this is anything interesting to people, I'd encourage you to look at their work. One was a Dr. Francis Pottinger, and he did a study called Pottinger's Cats. And what Dr. Pottinger looked at was the effect of diet on the next generation's health and well-being from an emotional but as well as a physical standpoint. And he worked with cats in part because they're so easy to work with because generationally they propagate so quickly. Mm. And with making some changes in diet for these barn cats, so, you know, cats that were a little bit feral, what he was able to see that was that with dietary changes, you could either propagate a very healthy version of the species, or within, I believe it was 7 or 9 generations, don't hold me to it, it was a successive weakening in terms of skeletal malformations, prone to infections, extra toes, scrawny fur, lack of balance, to the point where by, you know, that later generation of 7 or 9, whatever it was, they became infertile. And so, and that was the only thing that was different for these animals was just these dietary adaptations. The neat thing was that he was able to then change their diet and begin working backward from that, which was really neat. So there's hope for all of us, and certainly for the generation that comes after us. Because I think that one of the fallouts, as we kind of connect the dots in the Francis Pottinger kind of way, is also reflected in the other practitioner's work. The second doctor I was mentioning, his name was Dr. Weston A. Price, and Dr. Price was a dentist who lived in the Midwest, and he was really beginning to notice dietary changes seeming to have an impact on his patients' wellness, certainly on their dental structure, sinus structure, but also on their affect and their susceptibility to illness. And so he said, golly, I think I want to go study this. And so he and his wife, they packed up and took cameras and notebooks. And this was in the 30s. And they did sea travel, paid for it themselves, and they documented isolated tribes, villages of people who were continuing to eat their traditional diet, whatever was traditional for them. And so they went everywhere. They studied the Inuit up near Alaska. They studied the Seminole down in Florida. They went to Europe and studied the Swiss village in Europe. They went to Asia. They went to Africa. I mean, they were everywhere, Polynesian islands. Mm-hmm. And what they found was that they documented with photographs and logging of information. And the book is called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, if anybody wants to check it out. It's a big book, lots of pictures. Mm-hmm. And what Dr. Price found was that as he compared people of the same village, so he didn't compare people from Africa to people from Alaska. He compared mm-hmm. people of the same village, which was very smart. But as people of the same village brought in what would be called the modern foods of commerce, and so we have to think about what that would have looked like. That would have been things like refined flour, white mm-hmm. sugar, vegetable oil, tinned meat. Those would have been the modern foods of commerce that people would have picked up at the commissary, versus whatever they had been eating traditionally. And I think it's a good sideline here to just say that those modern foods of commerce are the types of foods that all of us today would say, oh, you're cooking from scratch. You know, like, that's the best stuff. And
yeah.
So as, big deal. You know what I mean? It's true. And so within one generation, it is incredible when you look at these photographs what began to happen in terms of the facial structure, the affective people, and their susceptibility to illness. And so fast forward to today, and that was a very roundabout answer, start of an answer to your question, but we fast forward to today, and I think one of the biggest fallouts from the messing up of the biome that we're doing is exactly this. It's this issue related to, and I've mentioned it a couple times, to fertility. And when I was born in 1971, I mean, it was not common the way that I see it so common now for people to have to go to fertility clinics to become pregnant. Mm. It wasn't
right.
common even in the 70s for kids to be wearing braces and having eyeglasses the way that it is so common now. And mm-hmm. so these are just some examples of how the system, when we look at it from a design evolutionary perspective, there's just been this weakening that has happened. And so to me, those are some of the very big fallouts, like huge fallouts, to what we have done to the biome because of the lifestyle choices we have undertaken in the last 100 years. To me, that's really big. Today, the big press is, you know, everybody's talking about leaky gut and adrenal fatigue and thyroid dysfunction. And I mean, all these things, they're real. They are absolutely happening. These buzzwords that we're talking about, it's reality. And so those are the modern kind of hot topics around this that people may recognize in the media. And it is. Mm-hmm. It's the fallout from jacking ourselves up from the inside out.
Yeah. You know, I looked up Pottinger's cat while you were talking. It's three generations.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
Three. And what's significant about that? Yeah. Three. We can see that in a lifetime.
Yes, you can see that in a lifetime. Is that amazing? That is just incredible. You should, and you can find these little YouTube videos that were old footage, you know, of some of the movies they shot around this. Gorgeous cats that they began with, and you can see it. It's like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden they're this scroungy cat with yucky eyes, and you can just tell they're just an unhealthy animal.
Wow, so fascinating.
It's so fascinating. And so the thing that's wonderful about it, though, is that, you know, we want to thrive. I mean, that's the design. We are designed to want to create and to thrive. And by taking out some of the junk and putting in more of the healthy nourishing, we have the capacity to allow our birthright to play itself out to its full potential. And so that's the epigenetic choices we make with what we put in our lives. And that's what shows up every day. You know, what are the choices I've been making, and what's the life that I have now as a result of that?
Yeah, so we can change it. We can alter it back.
Yes, we
can. To a certain
extent.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful. We really do want to do that. Now, of course, there are going to be some times where, you know, the it's just gone too far in one direction. But that does not mean that you shouldn't make it better. That's such an important mental headspace to be in. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm never going to be 4 years old again. That's not going to happen.
No.
But I can be the best 45 that I can be based off of everything I did up to today. And I would say about, you know, even though I've been a natural healthcare practitioner for many years, it wasn't until about, I don't know, 11 or 12 years ago that I really started engaging the activity around this thought. And I can say with complete honesty that, you know, my vitality, my mental clarity, everything in my life is so much better than it was 10 years ago. And I mean that. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing to be a perimenopausal woman, and which is a time when it's supposed to be so rife with, you know, such difficulty. And it was. It was becoming that for me. And that
right.
was one of the things that really made me stop and say, there's no way I can live this way. And so I started looking more deeply at this.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like the beginning of my journey.
Yeah,
which I won't get into. But, yes, similar, like, oh, no. It's not going to get any better unless something changes.
That's right. And then we do. We have to step into it. And that's the information. It's such an incredible gift to us that we live in the time that we do, that this is burgeoning forth so much information. There's a practitioner training that I'm doing around this. We're calling it the Belly Garden. And as I'm, you know, researching the information so that I've got, you know, good references as I'm making a point about something, it's amazing to me how much more reference material is out there than there was when I wrote my book 3 years ago. And so to just see this continuing movement forward of interest in this is really just so cool, so great.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you so much for your time and your sharing your wealth of knowledge. It's really, like, it's breathtaking, actually.
It is. It's mind-blowing, and I love it. I mean, you can go as deep as this as you will never, you won't touch bottom. It's so wonderful.
Wow. Yeah. So, in closing, is there something, like, is there something quick that people can just start doing just to start the change right now?
Right now. Stop using those goofy hand sanitizers. Please don't do that. That's a big one. Consider what you are exposing yourself to. That's huge. It really is such a big, big deal. I'm not joking when I say we have this highly absorptive organ where everything comes inside of us. It's called our skin. And then the one point that I make to patients and the people I teach all the time is that there really are a lot of things that we don't have a lot of control over that we're exposed to, you know, maybe where we work and what they put into the, you know, as they clean there and all of this. So there are a lot of things we don't always have control over. But what we put on and in our body is where we do have that control. And so start paying attention to what you're putting in your mouth and what you're putting onto your skin and your hair. These things all matter more than you know. And so just start being mindful about everything you're doing. Not to make yourself crazy and neurotic. It's not that. It's checking in with yourself and making the best choice for yourself.
Great. Wow. Thank you so, so much. And go to Amazon and get the Funky Kitchen and start learning how to make sauerkraut and make your own yogurt. It's really not that hard. And people are making kombucha. There's also a Facebook page about fermentation that you can have any question answered almost any time of the day or night. People are always on it.
Oh, my gosh. People are so – it's such a huge group of people, and they're from all over the world. And they are so gracious with their sharing. It's wonderful.
And what's the actual site called? I can't remember.
You know, there are a couple of that I'm a part of, and it's Fermenters, is it Fermenters Kitchen? Let me see if I can just bring it up here real fast, because I was just on there this morning, and someone was selling the cutest darn kraut making crocks. Oh, I love them.
Cute.
So wild fermentation is one. And
right.
So wild fermentation, Fermentation Nation, Fermenter's Kitchen. Wild Fermentation has 63,000 members, so there's a lot of people chatting on there.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, thank you so much. And maybe we can talk again. Maybe we can let's have a sauerkraut party or something.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I've got some chilling in the garage right now.
Nice.
Let's
sounds
do awesome.
It. Okay, thanks, Erica.
You bet. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.